Genesis chapter 28. Genesis 28. Last week we saw how the birthright passed from Esau to Jacob. Esau was not too happy about it. And at the end of chapter 27, Esau says, "Oh, may the days of mourning for my father draw near, so then I can go kill my brother Jacob." So Rebekah counsels Jacob to flee from his brother until his temper cools down. Says, "Just for a short time, then I'll send for you." Well, she never saw him again because he was gone at least 20 years, some think as much as 34 years. But we now come to chapter 28. And so Jacob has the birthright, and the last week he saw how he got the blessing. And so it says in verse 1, "So Isaac summoned Jacob and blessed him. He instructed him and said to him, 'Do not take a wife from the Canaanite women. Arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take a wife from there, from the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. And may El Shaddai bless you and make you fruitful and make you numerous, and may you be a kahal of peoples.'" And that there is the first time the word church appears in the Bible. Genesis 28 and verse 3. Because you see, the Hebrew word translated congregation is the exact same equivalent word to the Greek word ekklesia, which for some reason they translate as church. But ekklesia in the Greek and kahal, the Hebrew, mean exactly the same thing. A congregation, a called together, a called out group of people. So why don't we translate it with one English word all the way through from Genesis to Revelation? Well, we can thank King James for that. He wanted a wall that was insurmountable, built between the Hebrew scriptures and the Greek. And so he had certain Hebrew words translated one way and their Greek equivalents translated different, so the twain would never meet. And this is something that has really messed up theology, denominations, and so much. It brought so much confusion into the world. So anyways, this is the word kahal. And it's the first appearance of it. And Isaac is asking that God would make Jacob into a great kahal of people, a great church of peoples, a great ecclesia of peoples. "May he grant you the blessing of Abraham to you and to your offspring with you, that you may possess the land of your sojourns, which God gave to Abraham." So Isaac went away. Sent away Jacob, and he went from toward Padan Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean, brother of Rebekah, mother of Jacob and Esau. When Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him off to Padan Aram to take himself a wife from there, as he blessed him, he commanded him, saying, "You shall not take a wife from among the daughters of Canaan." And that Jacob obeyed his father and mother and went to Padan Aram. Then Esau perceived, that the daughters of Canaan were evil in the eyes of Isaac his father. Wait, what did it take for Esau to realize that these Canaanite wives he had already taken were not very pleasing to mom and dad? So what does he do to fix the problem? He takes another wife. It says in verse 9, "So Esau went to Ishmael and took Mahalat, the daughter of Ishmael, son of Abraham, sister of Naboth, in addition to his wife for himself." So he goes to Ishmael. "I'll go to Uncle Ishmael. I'll marry his daughter, my cousin." As if that's going to fix the whole thing. By the way, you know what this woman's name means? It means sickness. But isn't this a sign of a foolish person? If a little doesn't work, let's do it a lot and see if that works better. One aspirin didn't take away my headache, so I'm going to take the whole bottle. I mean, this is what a foolish person does. But I want us to consider what is happening here. Jacob is leaving his brother Esau, whose name is Edom. Edom means red. And he's going to go to Paddan Aram to see his uncle Laban. And Laban, Lavan, means white. So he's leaving red and going to white. And this had to have been the darkest day in Jacob's life. Here's a guy who the Bible tells us is a tent dweller, and now he's thrust outdoors, and he's going to be spending most of the next 20 years outdoors tending sheep. His father Isaac was wealthy. He had everything a person could desire. But Jacob leaves, and he has nothing but the staff in his hand and the clothes on his back. Jacob loved his mother and his father, and now he's going to be without them. He's going someplace he's never been before to try to accomplish something that he doesn't know how to do, and that's to find a wife. His brother, his twin brother, wants to murder him as soon as dad is dead. This is a dark day. And he's fleeing from red to go to white. But here's the interesting thing about this. When you take the first letter of Edom, which is Aleph, and the first letter of Laban, which is Lamed, they spell the word El. And what does El mean? It means God. In other words, God is in the whole thing. God is weaving it all together. And Jacob has a dual mission here. His mother Rebekah, in the previous chapter, right at the end, tells him, flee, go to my uncle until your brother's temper cools, because I don't want to lose you. Okay, I don't want to kill you. So mission number one is to flee from Esau. To flee from Esau. And then, in what we've just read, his father Isaac blesses him and gives him a second part to his mission. Don't marry a girl from here in Canaan. Go back to your mom's home and marry one of those girls. So the second part of his mission is to find a bride. Run away from your brother. Go find a bride. Now, Jacob, in many ways, is a picture of our Messiah. And as we know, Edom, which means red, in Jewish thought is equated with the Roman Empire. And more specifically, with Roman Catholicism. I'm not going to go into the whole history of this, but when a Jew reads the word Edom in the Bible, it thinks Rome. That's what it thinks. Because we do know that the founders of Rome did descend from Edom. Did Yeshua flee from Rome? No, he let the Romans kill him. He didn't run away. He let the Roman soldiers take him. He let Pilate try him. He let them beat him. He let them crucify him. He could have called 10,000 angels to his defense, but he didn't. But like a sheep led to slaughter, he just gave himself to the crucifixion. Jacob went to his homeland to find a bride. Yeshua left this earth, and he sent his spirit to build that bride. So we see that Jacob's image, Jacob's story, is like a mirror image, like a menorah pattern of Messiah. So something to keep in mind. We're going to find some other similarities between Jacob and Yeshua as we go through here. Now, it's so easy to miss that little bit right there in verse 4 where Isaac is blessing Jacob, says, may he grant you the blessing of Abraham to you and your offspring with you. What is the blessing of Abraham? Isaac did not give the blessing of Abraham to his son. Only God can give the blessing of Abraham to someone. What is the blessing? Well, let's go back and see what the blessing of Abraham is. We first see it back in Genesis 22, verses 17 to 18. This is at the Akedah after Abraham has taken his son Isaac up to the mountain to offer him up, and the angel intercedes and stops the process. And as you get to verse 17 and 18, this is what God says to Abraham. Indeed, I will greatly bless you. And here's the first thing. A, I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens and as the sand which is on the seashore. So here's the first part of the Abrahamic blessing. A nation's going to come out of you. You're going to have lots of kids, lots of offspring. You're going to be very fruitful. Second, your seed shall possess the gate of their enemies. In other words, you're going to inherit this land here. Right now, you're surrounded by enemies. You're surrounded by people who aren't like you. But their gates are going to become yours. Their cities will become yours. This land will become yours. See, in your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. The entire world is going to be blessed through you and your children. And of course, Paul, he does a midrash on this word seed, which is singular. And he says that word seed also applies to the Messiah himself. Now, you go on forward to Genesis 26, and we see God blessing Isaac. And here's what he says, Genesis 26, verses 3 and 4. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For you and your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore to your father, Abraham. And what was that? A, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. Lots of children. B, I will give your descendants all these lands. You inherit the land. C, by your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. You see how it repeats? Now, a little bit later in the chapter, in fact, we might as well read to that point now. Let's go on to chapter, or verse 10. Genesis 28:10. Jacob departed from Beersheba and went toward Haran. He encountered the place and spent the night there because the sun had set. He took from the stones of the place, which he arranged on his head and laid down in the place. The that. It's hamakom hahu is how it comes across in Hebrew. That place. Three times makom is used, the place, which is very odd wording. But we'll come back to this a little bit later. And he dreamt to behold a ladder was set earthward and its top reached heavenward. And behold, angels of God were ascending and descending on it. They were going up and they were coming down. And behold, Adonai was standing over him, and he said, I am Adonai, God of Abraham, your father, and God of Isaac. The ground upon which you are lying, to you I will give it, and to your descendants. Your offspring shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall spread out powerfully westward, eastward, northward, and southward. And all the families of the earth shall bless themselves by you and your seed. Isaac prayed and told Jacob, may God give you the blessing of Abraham. And here, God gave Jacob the blessing of Abraham. Look at the wording. And behold, Adonai stood above it and said, I am Adonai, the God of your father Abraham, who I gave the blessing to originally, and the God of Isaac, your father, who I gave the blessing to. Now I'm giving it to you. The land on which you lie, I will give it to you and to your descendants. You'll inherit the land. Your descendants will also be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west, the east, north, and south. Lots of children. And in you and in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. The Gentiles will be blessed through you and your children. You see the three components? But there are a few changes. Let's go back to what he said to Abraham. He says, I'm going to make your seed like the stars of the heavens and as the sand which is on the seashore. But then what did he tell Isaac? He says, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. But he doesn't mention the sand. But to Jacob, he says, I will make your descendants like the dust of the earth. But he doesn't mention the stars. There's another thing. You'll notice the order has changed. With Abraham and Isaac, many children is number one, and then inheriting the land is number two. But with Jacob, inheriting the land is first, and then having many descendants is number two. One more change. With Abraham, he said, in your seed, all the goyim, the Gentiles will be blessed. When he blesses Isaac, he uses the same word, the nations. It's the goyim. But here, with Jacob, he says all the families, the mishpachot, all the families will be blessed. Jacob is like the odd one here a little bit. Jacob is a little bit different. And as we go through the chapters of the weeks to come, we're going to continue to compare Jacob with his father Isaac and especially grandfather Abraham. We're going to find oddities and differences. In fact, on the way in, Lindsay, she's been reading this and she was asking some questions about how Abraham and Jacob were different and how they were the same. And we had a really neat discussion on the way in. And we're going to be looking at many of those things. Let me just give you one example. I mean, this is one I've shared with you before, but just refresh your memories. No, God doesn't change Isaac's name. He's born Isaac, he lives Isaac, he dies Isaac. His name has never changed. But his father Abraham and his son Jacob, their names were changed. How did God change Abram's name? He took it from Abram and made it Abraham. He took the letter He and added it to Abram to make it Abraham. He added one letter. Now, Jacob, Yaakov, is changed to Yisrael. With Jacob, he kept one letter of his name and changed all the rest. Did you catch that? Abram, God adds a letter. With Jacob, God keeps a letter and changes all the rest. The letter that's added to Abram's name is Hey. The letters that's kept in Yaakov and stays in Yisrael, the first letter of his name, is Yud. What are those spell? Yah, which is the first two of Yahweh, God's holy name. And a dozen places or so, God is just referred to as Yah, his proper name. All right, just an example how Jacob and Abraham, similar but opposites, like mirror images of each other. Okay, let's go a little bit further. What's going on with this Abrahamic blessing? I want us to look here. There are three elements involved. Establishing the nation, lots of children, a new people, inheriting the land of Israel, and being a light and blessing to the nations. You know, that's the same mission Yeshua has. Establishing a nation. Yeshua came to save us from our sins. He came to redeem us. He came to bring salvation first to Israel and then to the entire world. And when he returns, we'll see all of this fulfilled. Because when he returns, then, and only then, as the prophets all prophesy, then there will be peace in Israel. The people will be in their land. The son of David will rule on the throne of Israel. The temple is reestablished. And the nations gather to Israel to worship the king. And all the nations of the earth will be blessed. There will be peace in the world. This is the blessing of Abraham. And we see Yeshua as the seed that is referred to in every one of these blessings. To Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, he is that seed that makes all the seed prosper. Makes them one, makes them blessed, and makes them a blessing, and makes them lights to the world. It's an amazing thing to look at. So keep the Abrahamic blessing in mind. This is what it is, these three components. And I see a hand up, so let's get a microphone over here to Jim. Here it comes. And if you're visiting with us, you are allowed to ask questions or share comments. So Jim, raise your hand so they could find you. There you are. Okay. All right.
As you recently informed me, Canaan became Israel.
Yes.
When it did the people that were there remain there, or did they scatter and become other countries?
Oh, are there any descendants of the original Canaanites? In other words, I don't know. whatever their identity they had has been lost. I'm sure some escaped to other countries, but they have no identity anymore. The Philistines, the Palestinians, who live in the nation of Israel now, are not descendants of the original Philistines, though. They have the same name, Philistine, Palestinians, same word in Hebrew. They are not descendants of the original Philistines. They came in from Saudi Arabia somewhere. So, yeah, you're welcome. Now let's take a look at this vision Jacob had. He, if you look at verse 13, I'm sorry, verse 12. He dreamt, and behold, a sulam, a ladder. This is the only appearance of the word ladder, sulam, in the Bible, in the Hebrew, I should say. It was set earthward. So in other words, its foundation was in heaven, but it reached down to the earth. It didn't start on the earth and reach to heaven. It started in heaven and reached to the earth. Its top reached heavenward. And behold, angels of God were ascending and descending on it. That word "it" can also be translated as "him," translated descend, ascending, descending on him. Hold that thought for a moment. Now, what's with a ladder? What's the deal here? I was driving around this week, and I started just thinking about a ladder. And on the left is a picture of of my stepladder. My stepladder. I never knew my real ladder. But anyways, there's my stepladder. And, you know, for a lot of people, this is a picture of their lives. But on the right is not the exact kind of ladder Jacob dreamed of. But the ladder on the right has a destination. The ladder on the left does not. Which kind of ladder are you on? See, on the left, this is a picture to me of religion. And religion basically serves a purpose of self-aggrandizement, self-elevation. And you reach up, but where did you get to? It kind of reminds me of the warning that God gives Moses, the people of Israel, in Exodus 20. He says, when you build an altar, don't make it so tall that you have to make steps to go up. Don't do that, lest your nakedness be seen when you go up. And I think this is a picture of religion. I think it's a picture of legalism. There's no destination. It's just to go higher than everybody else. But the ladder that Jacob saw had a destination. It was to transport you from one place to another place, from one realm to a different realm, and also to bring things from that other realm to this one. Because it said there were angels ascending and there were angels descending. It brings you to God. It brings God into the world. But they're completely two different realms that are being connected. You know, we used to sing that song when we were kids, I'm climbing Jacob's ladder. Well, are you? You see, one of the things I notice among so many believers, and in myself, I'll confess it to you, is a love for the world. And you know what John says? Do not love the world, nor the things in the world. For if you love the world, the love of the Father is not in you. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of God, but of the world. And so many times I find myself getting caught into a conversation, and soon I find myself descending the ladder instead of going up. I'm gravitating back to this realm down here, talking about the things in the world I like and the things in the world I don't like, and comparing myself, and just like, And it bothers me when I hear other believers, people who are disciples, forget who they are and begin talking about the things of the world like they really matter. Whereas we should be talking about the things of the world to come. We should be living in this world according to the rules and the ways of the world to come. Because this world's passing away. But that world is on its way here, and it will never pass away. This world here is just a fog, it's a mist, it's not really real, it's not substantial. But the world to come is. And that is where we should be going. That is where we should be focusing. My flesh likes to descend the ladder. It likes to put its feet firmly on the ground. After all, my flesh is made from the dirt. It likes the dirt. It wants to be here, close to the earth. But I have a spirit in me that comes from God. I have a neshama, a soul breathed into me from Him. And my soul, my spirit, they want to go to their source. They want to go to where they came from. And there's this battle. Do I take another step up? I'm afraid of heights. Let's take a step back down. It's scary up there. And there's this war, but which one are you going to do? Which way are you going to go on this ladder? And I sent out an email. They ask you, how come he saw a ladder and not a staircase? So many times, paintings you see of Jacob's ladder, they have the angels like walking down this beautiful spiral staircase. It wasn't a staircase, it was a ladder. What's the difference between using a staircase and using a ladder? Exactly. Adam is raising his hands. I thought he turned Pentecostal there for a second. He's holding his hands up. You have to use your feet and your hands. You have to use them all four. Stairs, you can just walk down the steps or up the steps. Your hands are free to do whatever you want. But when you are invested in the ladder, your walk and your actions are all involved. Because your hand has to take hold of a rung that hopefully soon your foot will be on. And what you grasp and do with your hands becomes where your feet will eventually be. And your feet follow your hands. What are you doing? Because what you're doing is where you're going to be walking. But if you're walking in the flesh, then where your feet take you is what your hands are going to be doing. And it's left, right, left, right, left hand, right hand, left foot, left, right, physical, spiritual, back and forth. All the time. That's what a spiritual walk is. It's in your flesh. You walk and you make your flesh obey. And you reach forward spiritually. And your flesh follows. You reach spiritually. It's something you must do in your spirit. And in your soul and in your body. Because you must love the Lord your God. With all of your heart. With all of your soul. And with all of your... And we don't know how to translate that word. Some say all your might. All your resources. It's in the Hebrew, you're to love God with all of your me'adecha. What's me'adecha? It's plural of the word ma'od. Ma'od simply means very, V-E-R-Y. That's what it means. How do you translate that into Hebrew? So what are you very? Are you very smart? Then worship God with your intellect. Are you very strong? Worship God with your strength. Are you very financially successful? Worship God with all your finances. Are you very talented in music or art, whatever? Worship God with that. What is it you do? What is it you are? Worship God with that. Whatever you gifts God's given you physically in this world, you use those for Him. Your heart, your soul, your nefesh, that's the outer part of your soul, and all of these other things out here. Because that is how we walk with the Lord. We can't just use our hands for worldly things and use our feet for godly things. We either are all in or all out, one or the other. Because climbing a ladder involves the entire person. It involves the entire person. Robin, did I see your hand? It's so great having my wife here. She's been teaching the children for the last 6 months. And I've missed you. I'm glad you're here. So let's get a microphone to my lovely bride up here. Yeah, but I can't tell any more Robin stories now that you're back. So, okay.
I love the image of a ladder. And we've talked about it among the ladies here a lot. And one of the things that we discovered together that has been really helpful and significant to many of us is that this journey that we take, this connective journey between this familiar physical place and that invisible kind of elusive spiritual place where we're wanting to go to, the difference between a ladder and a staircase, you can only climb a ladder alone.
Yeah.
You don't share it with a crowd.
That's right.
This is a very personal and individual journey that each of us has to take on our own, and it takes a lot of courage because it's always tempting to go back where we've been because it's familiar.
That's right.
But every step to ascension is to the unfamiliar, and it takes courage. And the space between the rungs is much larger than the rungs, if you look at the ladder. So it's a common experience as we're trying to ascend to this connection with the unseen that we're not quite sure of ourselves, and we don't know where to put our foot down. And you're searching for a place to land and to feel secure.
Yeah.
Well, that's what faith is.
Yes.
And so often when I'm feeling that, ooh, I'm not sure what's what, and I'm a little scared, and I'm a little unsure, well, that's the space between the rungs.
That's right.
But if I continue up and I trust, my foot will eventually land.
That's right.
And I'll look out and I'll have a better vantage point because I'm higher than I was before I did that.
That's right.
Does that make sense?
It does. Very much so. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, Robin brings up an important point. The ladder is mostly empty space, not like a staircase, mostly just empty space. It seems so insubstantial. In fact, let me show you a picture of what life looks like for me. I happen to come across this photograph, and that's what, especially as I get older, that's what life looks for me. And you know how the Torah says, the Psalms say that the Torah is a lamp to my feet, a light to my path. You've heard many people comment this. You just see the next step or two. I only see the next rung or two. But I know where the ladder's going. But it looks sometimes like I'm climbing right up into nothingness. But every time I go up a rung, another one appears. But it looks very insubstantial, doesn't it? But you know what? The older I get, the less I look down. And the more I just keep looking up because I know there's more ladder behind me than in front of me. And so I'm over halfway, so I might as well just finish it out. I turned 65 last week. And, you know, I doubt I'm going to live another 65 years here. I don't have any plans to check out soon, but I realize that most of my life is behind me. Probably at least 2/3, 3/4 of it is behind me. So it's like, well, too late to go back down the ladder. Let's just keep on climbing. And it's like I've lost my fear of heights to a great degree. It's like I just want to know him. I just want to know him. I want to finish. My goal is not to be higher than someone else. It's just to reach the destination. The ladder leads somewhere. I can't see where it leads, but I have good authority from the Word of God that it leads to a wonderful destination. And by George, it's going to keep on climbing. You know what I mean? So, I encourage you, climb with me. Let's encourage each other to keep going up this ladder together. Steve, I think I saw your hand up. Yeah, go right ahead.
The ladder that you used to work had a marking on the side that shows you what angle has to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So, the direction on the side of how to safely use the ladder.
Yeah.
But out of all the ladders we have, we don't have one where people can ascend and descend at the same time.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, this had to have been a wide ladder that Jacob saw. Yeah. I mentioned before that it says that Jacob saw, God spoke to him, and Jacob saw the angels ascending and descending on it, or it could be on him. There's something I want you to consider. Hebrews 3:1. Hebrews 3:1. Therefore, holy brethren, partakers of a heavenly calling. Where are we called to? We're called to a place not of the world, but a place of the heavens. It says, consider Yeshua and calls him two things, apostle and high priest. Stop there. What is the difference between an apostle and a high priest? Now, the word apostle comes from the Greek word apostello, which means to send. In Hebrew, an apostle is called a shaliach, from the Hebrew word shalach, which means to send, a sent one. And normally, these were sent like from a king as an emissary to take a message to one of the cities or to someone in the realm. So he's sent from the authority above to someone below. So the job of an apostle is to bring a message from the king down into the kingdom. But what does a high priest do? A high priest represents the people, brings their sacrifices to who? To God. Brings their prayers, helps them to pray, helps them to lead their lives. He helps bring them into a place of holiness to come before God. A high priest's role is exactly the opposite. Okay? I'll go ahead and get fancy, put some shading in there. There we go. All right? It's just the opposite. Now, Yeshua was both. He represented God to us, and he also comes and represents us to God. He descends, so to speak, and ascends, so to speak. In fact, if you take all the sayings of Yeshua, all the words in red, if you have one of those Bibles, and now you'll hear people argue about this, was God, or Yeshua is just a man, and some might say, oh no, he is God. And they can all find a pile of verses to support their view. And that's because half the things Yeshua says, he says over here on this side of the ledger. He says as one who is sent from God, speaking for God, speaking as God to us, bringing God's message to us. The other half of the things he says, he speaks like a man, showing us how we speak to God, how we approach God. He ascended and descended. He's the apostle and the high priest. He does both. You see, Yeshua is the latter. If you don't believe me, look at John, right at the end of the chapter. John chapter 1. Yeshua saw Nathanael coming to him and said to him, behold, an Israelite indeed in whom there is no deceit. Unlike Jacob, who did have a little deceit. Nathanael said to him, how do you know me? Yeshua answered and said to him, before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I think he was taking a nap. Where was Jacob when he saw the ladder? He was sleeping. While you're under the fig tree, I saw you. Nathanael answered him, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You're the King of Israel. Yeshua answered and said to him, because I said to you that I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You will see greater things than these. And he said to him, truly, truly, I say to you, you will see the heavens opened, the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. See the connection to our story? Who's the Son of Man? Yeshua is. And there are these references back to chapter 28 with Jacob and his dream of the ladder. And the angels ascending and descending on the Son of Man. He's the one that connects heaven and earth. He is the one. He not only is he our destination, he is our way to get to the destination. It's an amazing picture, amazing image that you can spend a lot of time meditating on. I encourage you to do that. And I see Ben's hand up back here. So Ben, go right ahead.
It is on.
Showing
a picture of the ladder.
Yes.
You kept thinking about two things. One, my two-year-old has no problem climbing a ladder.
That could be a problem.
And then there's this age somewhere after that where, you know, all of them at some point have fallen off of a ladder.
Yeah.
And it's a little little scarier to,
right,
to come up again.
Good
and
point.
I think, at least for me, I'm realizing the kind of, I think everybody falls off or gets knocked off or is going down this path of seeing,
yeah,
God inside, and He's calling all of us. And it's really easy to miss that somebody fell down, and it's really hard for them to start climbing again.
Yeah.
Like, it's scary to,
oh, yeah,
to go, and who knows why they fell off, or, but the one that never fell off yet doesn't know what it,
that's, is. Right. That's right. Yeah, what our past experiences can cause us to fear following God. It's so true. Yeah, you mentioned your 2-year-old climbing ladders. I just remember, just like it was yesterday, when we lived in England, and Caleb, who's back here, he was like 5 years old, four, turned five, and when we went. And we visited the ruins in Tintagel, this place down the Cornwall coast. They, legend says the ruins up there are the castle of King Arthur's original castle. I doubt it. But anyways, the ruins are something out in this rock, out in the ocean, and there's this place where they have these stairs cut out of the stone. And the stairs are about a foot tall and only about 6 inches deep. And they just go up. They go up probably 150 feet, way up, and there's just a sheer drop off on either side. Now, they have this little steel handrail you can hold on to. I was clutching on that thing for dear life. And while I was doing something, taking some pictures, I looked up, and Caleb just marched right up the middle of the staircase, not holding on to anything. And I was terrified. He had no fear of heights. He'd probably never fallen at that point. But he just was marching up, and I thought, I'm not going to yell at him. He turns around, he'll look down, and, you know, he just marched right up to the top like it was nothing. And I was holding on that handrail for dear life. And it was, but you're right. Children have such faith. And they have no problem following God, just climbing the ladder, physical or otherwise. And it really is true. We get older, we get beat up a little bit, we get scared. But I think of Yeshua reaching down for Peter. Why were you afraid? Why did doubts arise in your heart? You know, why? You little faith. And that's true. So true. All right. Yes, Sharon. Let's get a microphone to Sharon here.
Seeing as that I am thoroughly enjoying listening to Chronicles of Narnia, focus on the family, this whole comment of the innocence of youth, I'm reminding that the youngest of the children, Lucy, was the only one who was always ready and attentive, and she recognized when Aslan was nearby, and the older children, you know, did not. So as we get older and our faith gets more improved, I think, you know, the prayer is to be more childlike.
Yeah. And the key is to become more childlike, but not childish. I got the second pegged. I can be childish as all good. But to be childlike without the childish part, yeah, that's the balancing act, isn't it? Well, I want us to revisit verse 11. He encountered the place, spent the night there because the sun had set. He took stones from the place, which he arranged on his head, lay down in the place. What's the deal with the place? And you'll find it mentioned three times. In Hebrew, it's hamakom. And this word, makom, hamakom, has almost taken on a mystical kind of significance in Hebrew thought. And we do know that the place where this occurs with Jacob is the same place where later the temple was built. He's up at the top of in Jerusalem, the area where Jerusalem would be. Somewhere in that area where the temple was built, where Yeshua was crucified, where Abraham offered his son Isaac. All of these things happen in this place. It's called the place. And we see it mentioned three times there in verse 11. But then you go down a bit further and to verses 16 to 19, and let's take a look. And Jacob awoke from his sleep after he saw this vision and the dream. He said, "Surely Adonai is in this place, and I did not know it." He was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." So Jacob arose early in the morning, took the stone that he had put under his head, and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on its top. He called the name of that place Bethel, house of God. So three times again, you see the word Makom used. And you know, I remember the first time I taught at this Beth Tikkun many, many years ago. And I shared then, I said, if Beth Tikkun ever owns its own building, where we can have an ark with the Torah in it, you know, and just kind of keep things established and we can kind of decorate the way we want. On one side, I would like the words, "Surely Adonai is in this place," and I did not know it. And on the other side, I'd love to see the words, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." Because, you know, though Jacob had this particular experience at this particular place, I think you and I, if we just have eyes to see, no matter where we are at, no matter where we're at, we can say, "Surely Adonai is in this place, and I didn't know it." Because after all, the glory of the Lord fills the earth. The whole earth is filled with his glory. But we take so little time to really try to realize that where we are, even if you're washing dishes, mowing the grass, working on a machine in a factory, or trying to quiet a crying baby, or sick in bed, or just God's in that place. I dare you to find a place where he isn't. David said, even if I make my grave in Sheol, you're there. We just don't seem to realize it. We're so spiritually dull to take the time to recognize God's in this place. And when we begin to realize that God is where we are, then we can say, "How awesome is this place?" You'll think of the miracle it is that you are alive and in the particular place at the particular time that you are. And it's not a coincidence. It is God's design. And you begin to realize, this is awesome. Awesome is the word, it refers to there's such a place of reverence to realize I'm alive in this world just for a very, very short time, but I'm still here. I still have things I can do. Because after I leave here, there's nothing more I can do. But while I'm here, I can do something. I can become something more. I can go up one more rung. I can draw closer to God, accomplish something for him, build his kingdom a little bit, touch another life. This is awesome. What a privilege I have. And yet we waste time. We kill time. Time is life, by the way. And when you kill time, that's just a form of suicide. You can put that on the refrigerator door. Killing time is a form of suicide. Because time is life. It's your life. And if you're killing it, it's just suicide for that period of time you're wasting. This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Because right where you're at any moment, it's a gate to heaven where you can speak to him, he can speak to you, you can have communication with him. Now, sometimes we may be overwhelmed, as Jacob was, with the reality that God is here. That he's right here. This is a holy place. But we should be in the business of elevating the mundane to the holy and recognizing that he's always with us. Always. And every moment can be a holy moment. Not that it's dull and boring and religious, but it's still holy. Playing with a child, feeding the dog, walking the dog, taking a nap, eating a meal, having a conversation with your spouse about the weather or about your day. Holy activities, all every single one of them, if you'll see it that way. And Barb, I saw your hand up. So let's get a microphone over to Barb and then back to Rick. Yeah, Barb, hold your hand up, Barb, so Steve can find you. Okay, there you go. Yes.
My translation says, how dreadful is this place? And I think, how could it possibly be dreadful to be in any place where he is?
Yes.
So that, I think that just goes back to translations. And,
yeah, I might find me a new translation. Yeah. Yeah. So true. Yeah. Yeah. Dreadful. We use the word differently now than maybe when your translation was done, but it means it's a place of fear, but of awe, of respect, of reverence, and you realize God is right here. When we realize God is right here, we change the way we act. You know? So, okay, Rick, yes.
I noticed in Tanakh, in this passage, verse 11, it says, he encountered the place.
Mm-hmm.
Encountered to us would be like, well, I stopped at or I arrived at.
Yeah.
But the word encountered seems like a different type of word.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And the rabbis, very astute observation. Yeah, the word is there. It's very different. We were writing this. Yeah, he came to a certain place, got tired, went to sleep. I mean, the wording, everything about it is very odd, as if God is trying to point out there's something special going on here. There's something particular. In fact, let's move on here. I want us to see that this pattern is repeated in other places. The word place is used three times there in verse 11, but then it's used three more times in this passage, verses 16 and 19. But there's a certain pattern. Watch what it is. The first time the place is mentioned, it says, surely Adonai is in this place and don't know it. So first of all, there's revelation. My eyes are open. I realize God is in this place. And then he says, how awesome is this place? This is another than the house of God. So Jacob rose early in the morning, took the stone that he put under his head, and set it up as a pillar. So he builds something. He establishes a monument. He puts something together. Takes stones. He raises this pillar up. Pours oil on its top. And then he names the place. He gives it a new name. The name is Bethel. Before it was called Luz. But now he names it Beit El, house of God. Now let's look at another passage of scripture. Let's go back to Genesis 22 again. This is where God gives Abraham the blessing. But earlier in the chapter, it says, on the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. So he raised his eyes and saw. There's revelation. He didn't know where he was going. But after 3 days, he recognized the place that God wanted him to go. Verse 9. Then they came to the place. This is the second reference to place, of which God had told him. And Abraham, what did he do? He built the altar there. He built something. Rains of wood bound his son Isaac. Verse 14, Abraham called the name of that place Adonaiira. He gives it a name. See the pattern? Adonaiira, as it is said, in the mount of Adonai it will be seen. Adonaiira means Adonai sees or will be seen. Notice the same pattern, right? Revelation, building, naming. Now, let's fast forward from Jacob about 20 years. We don't know how many, but at least 20. Some say 34. So we're in Genesis 35. Jacob comes back to the same location. Verses 13 and 15. Then God went up from him in the place where he had spoken with him. So this is the place where God had revealed himself. He had spoken to Jacob before. Jacob set up a pillar in the place. So now he's building something. Where he had spoken with him, a pillar of stone, he poured out a drink offering on it. He also poured oil on it. So Jacob named the place. And again, it tells us he named the place. Same pattern again. Revelation, building, naming. Now, Rabbi Shabtai Sabato writes about this, and he calls these three things, not revelation, building, and naming as I do. He calls them revelation, preparation, and dedication. And as I was studying, thinking about this week, I started thinking about Beth Tikkun. And, you know, Beth Tikkun has been, I think about 23 years now, has been around officially. And, you know, it started off with a revelation. Started off with a trip to Israel. And something was birthed in me that was supernatural. I had to learn Hebrew. I had to understand what Jewishness was, because I suddenly realized Jesus wasn't a Baptist. And I wanted to know, what was his practice? How did he live out his spiritual life? What was Judaism? Had Judaism gotten off the rails? Because it seems like he, even though he was Jewish his whole life and never changed that, it seemed like he was always bringing correction to the Jewish practices. So I wanted to know, what is it all about? And so for the last 26 years, this has been my pursuit, learning Hebrew and understanding the faith of my Messiah. And then out of that, over these years, here we are. A little home Bible study to start off with Robin and me. And then another couple that we pray, God, send us, just send us one other family, one other couple, send us one more. And God misheard. He sent us a bunch, which is great. But here we are. And over the years, it's been built. It's just been building. But I think we're reaching a time where God has taken us to a place where he's almost bringing us to a place of deeper dedication to him. Not a renaming that we're going to change Beth Tikkun to something else, but that Beth Tikkun, place of restoration, place of repair, really becomes a place of restoration and repair. I know the elders have all sensed this. I have sensed this. It's almost like we've gone through our adolescence. We've reached an adulthood. And it's time to live as adults. This is what we've been going for. Not that we're changing. Beth Tikkun will always be Beth Tikkun. I don't ever want its character to change, its spirit, and just the flavor of this place. That will never change. Not on my watch, it won't. But just become all that we can be. Become what God's calling us to be. This is his project. It's not mine. It's not the elders. We're just kind of here to kind of manage it. But I've shared before with you, people often ask me, well, what are your future plans for Beth Tikkun? I don't have future plans for Beth Tikkun. I'm just looking for the next rung on the ladder for myself. I have no plans for Beth Tikkun. And I say, well, if you plant a tree, what are your plans for that tree? Oh, I just want to grow up, be a healthy tree, be fruitful. That's about as far as my plans go. I want the same for Beth Tikkun. And God has been very faithful in that. But I see this repetition of revelation, preparation, and then dedication. And I just ask all of us to rededicate ourselves, not to Beth Tikkun, but to him. Just to live fully, to finish strong. You know, I do believe that our Messiah is coming soon. He's returning soon. And I hope it's in my lifetime. I think that'd be wonderful. But I know he's going to return to us on the world, or he's going to return and take me, one or the other. But he's returning for me one way or the other. And there's going to be an encounter. Every one of us will encounter him sooner than what you expect, what we could ever dream. So let's dedicate ourselves to finishing strong, to being the people he wants us to be, so that when he comes, he will find us faithful. He'll find us devoted to loving him with all of our heart, soul, and strength, to loving one another as ourselves, doing the work he's given us to do, and nothing but raising our families, raising our kids, encouraging one another towards good works, and so much more as you see the day approaching, the writer of Hebrews says. And just find us really plugged in doing what he wants to do. And Yeshua said, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, by your love for one another. And I would love to see our community be a place where outside, next to your family, that is, your number one outpouring of love is to the community. Then after that, everything else. Everyone else. But to pour your love into the community. So there will be at least one place, I think there are many more, but at least one place we know of where people step in and they think, here is a community that really, really loves each other. That esteems the others better than themselves. Who really takes care of each other. And we can all do better than that. I'm preaching to me. We can all do better than that. That we have. So let's push on. Let's up the ante a bit. Let's up our game. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not complaining about anything. You are a loving community. I'm not chewing anybody out. I'm just saying, if you can do this good, what's to keep us from doing even better? And I've never seen it done better than what it is here. I've never seen it done better in any community than I see it right here. Because I don't spend much time outside of this community, but I'm so proud of you. It's like, you know what? Why not just kick it up a notch? Why not? What's the harm? Rabbi Sabato makes one other comparison. You know, there in Hamakom, in that place, Abraham named it Adonai Yireh. In this place, on the mountain, God will be seen. And it just so happens that three times a year, the men of Israel were to be seen on the mountain. They were to go to Jerusalem. These are the pilgrimage feasts. They were to be seen on the mountain so they could encounter God in a very intimate and special way. And those three occasions were Pesach, which is Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot. And there is a case for saying that Passover kind of compares to Revelation, because it was in Egypt at that first Passover, God revealed his power. He revealed the fact that he is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and these are their kids, and I am redeeming them out. And he did it in a powerful way. He brought the plagues to expose the gods of Egypt as frauds. He exposed Pharaoh as a fraudulent God king. He split the sea. You talk about revelation. And then at Shavuot, Pentecost, we celebrate the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai, and also where God empowers that early Kohol, first century Kohol, with his spirit. That was all preparation. He says, you'll be witnesses to me in Jerusalem and Samaria and to the uttermost parts of the earth, but don't leave Jerusalem yet. Wait until you've been filled with the power of the Holy Spirit. Then you're ready. So it's a place of preparation. And being filled with the Spirit, being filled with the words of Torah are compatible. They both go together. And then Sukkot, tabernacles, is just the opposite of Pesach. Now, in Passover, we get the leaven out of the house, like getting the sin out of our lives. But what do we do at Sukkot? We get ourselves out of the house. We completely give ourselves to the Lord. We take risks. We get out of the house with the nice firm walls and waterproof roof. But we go out into a booth where the rain kind of comes through. But boy, is it beautiful. We realize how temporary things are here. But Sukkot is a week-long feast of just giving ourselves fully to God, recognizing his provision and abandoning ourselves to him. It's a time of dedication. It really is a beautiful symmetry, isn't it, between these three things and these three. So, any questions or comments? We can't allow ourselves to finish on time. Yes, Sebastian. Let's get a microphone to Sebastian. And let's get us a track star to run these microphones around next time. Any track stars in here? Oh, no, Steve. Not at all. Sure, go right ahead.
Going back to the ladder and what Mrs. Luton had said, We go up those ladders alone. But most ladders, we need somebody at the bottom supporting it. Mm-hmm. So as we climb up the ladder, it's better to have somebody to help steady the ladder for us as we climb up to make the trip easier. My second comment, you were talking about Beth Dacoon for the past 26 years, I think you said.
About 23, so yeah.
And it's been growing. It's just like what Adam was saying. He's going to make his offspring multiply.
Yeah.
And so for the past 23 years, we've just been growing, and it's like our offspring has been growing forth.
Yes, good point. Very good point. Well, going back to your first point, Sebastian, then we'll close with this. Yeah, earthly ladder, you need somebody at the bottom anchoring it. But this ladder that Jacob saw, it was anchored in heaven. Nothing's going to shake it. It's good. The earth will shake, but the ladder won't. And but it's good to have people there encouraging us on. And that's what we should be doing for each other, encouraging one another on. You know, I used to always catch my kids doing things bad. And then finally, after they're grown, too late, somebody says, you catch your kids doing things good. And I thought, as soon as he said that, I knew that was right. And I thought, well, I can just find the bad things they're doing and fix them. And they said, no, find them doing things right and encourage them. And that's what God does with us. So let's close in prayer. And Father, we thank you so much for your blessing. We thank you for the richness of your word, the truths that are buried there for us to discover. And I pray, Father, that you would help us to be the people you want us to be. Just guide our steps. Give us wisdom. Help us in our marriages, in our families, and in this community to live out a life of faith, a life of truth, a life of Torah. And maybe do it in a way that is filled and inundated with your love. Love for you and love for one another. And continue just to direct Beth Dacoon's steps over the days ahead. And again, I pray that you'd make us the people you want us to be. And that when Messiah returns, he would find us faithful, at our post, doing our duty, and carrying out the commandment to love, love, love. Lord, I pray you be pleased with what you find when you return. And we ask this in the name of Yeshua and for the sake of his kingdom. Amen.